at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Recently, the New Hampshire Union Leader in Sunday News has dug into an uncomfortable topic, child abuse. Reporter Nancy West looked at the trends of children being hurt or sexually abused, including those with injuries so grave they were hospitalized. She also examined some conflicting data that make it hard to discern just how much progress society is making toward combating child abuse. One set of numbers indicate success in New Hampshire, showing large drops in sexual and physical abuse, suggesting some treatment and prevention programs are working. But other reports show other troubling trends, and those who work in the field directly with children say they're still seeing plenty of heartbreaking cases. Today in The Exchange, we revisit this issue, what's behind these stories, how we define child abuse, and how we approach it these days. And we're going to start out with Nancy West of the Union Leader, as I said. And Nancy, thanks for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Well, what drew you to this topic? This is a tough topic for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the subject matter. What was it that made you drawn to cover this, Nancy?
I wrote about a 2-year-old boy last year who was beaten so badly, it looked like he wouldn't survive.
Wow.
He did, thank God. You know, but ever since then, I've noticed we're reporting more and more on kids who are just really badly beaten enough that they're charged, the accuser is charged criminally. It just didn't make sense to me, because some of the studies are showing that a dramatic decline in child abuse is taking place.
And yet you kept reporting on these, you know, a story here, a story there about a child who was hurt so badly he or she was hospitalized. And I remember
right.
that one story you're talking about. By the way, just to let folks know, that story had a happy ending, right? He's recovering. He's with his dad now in Maine, right?
Yes, he's doing very well. And the man who beat him has been prosecuted and found guilty.
Well, throughout this reporting that you did then, Nancy, when you stepped back and took that broader look, what jumped out at you?
Well, what jumped out at first was the conflicting data. You know, some of the studies showing physical abuse really declining dramatically in 2 decades, and others showing an increase in hospitalizations for severe abuse. For instance, in New Hampshire, 400 kids ended up in the hospital over an 8-year period due to child abuse.
Wow.
Some had been beaten, bitten, strangled, and even poisoned.
Wow.
And a large group of these were newborns to 4-year-olds.
So, Nancy, and I know this is something you really struggled with, looking at, you know, some studies showing good news, other studies showing terrible news. How do we, the public, then, Nancy, really figure out what's going on if the experts themselves disagree?
Well, I think what they're going to have to do is look past the data and understand that a lot of the cases that are reported and substantiated, those have to reach certain legal barriers. And it's becoming harder in New Hampshire to find substantiation because of changes in the law.
What kinds of changes are you talking about, Nancy?
Well, I think 2 changes were made in 2007 that made it much harder. For instance, when a social worker knocks on somebody's door who's accused of abusing or suspected, not even accused, suspected of abusing their children, the first thing the social worker has to say is, you don't have to let us in because without a court order. The second hurdle is DCYF is now required to videotape all of the interviews it does with children. And sometimes children balk, and it's a little more frightening, and they may be less likely to disclose.
Sure. Sometimes people get nervous in front of that camera. Absolutely, especially kids. What do you hope readers take away from these articles, Nancy? You've done a couple now.
Yeah. You know, I hope they realize that, you know, even one child, a handful of children, hundreds of children, but whatever the numbers are, there's a lot more work to be done to keep children safe. We also need to protect family rights and change attitudes. And I think the bottom line is we really need to help families who are struggling to end the abuse cycle.
All right. Nancy, thanks a lot. Great work.
Thank you.
Again, that's Nancy West, reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader in Sunday News, who's been covering this topic of child abuse recently. And that's what we're looking at today on The Exchange, how we define child abuse, what the trends are. Let's hear from you. What do you make of this information? What have you seen in your own community, in your own experience? And how do you think our attitudes toward child abuse may have changed, including how we define it, how we deal with it? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests for the hour with us in studio. Jim Reams, he's county attorney for Rockingham County. He prosecutes some of the worst cases of child abuse. And Jim, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me again, Laura.
Also with us, Lorraine Bartlett, administrator for all field services, including the New Hampshire Division of Children, Youth, and Families Child Protection Bureau. And Lorraine, good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
Also with us on the phone, David Finkelhor, director of the Crimes Against Children Research Center, professor of sociology at UNH. His most recent book is Child Victimization, Violence, Crime, and Abuse in the Lives of Young People. And David Finkelhor, great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Well, and let's look at the data, David, if we could, without getting too bogged down. So what are you seeing? Has the amount of child abuse gone up or gone down in New Hampshire?
Well, it depends. It's a complicated picture. It's gone down clearly for sexual abuse. The data suggests that it's gone down for physical abuse as well, but neglect has not declined. Those are the three largest categories of child maltreatment that tend to get investigated and substantiated. It's down about 81% if we're talking about sexual abuse over the 20-year period starting in 1991, where back then they were seeing 400 or 500 cases a year, and now 2010, 2011, they substantiated about 100 cases. Physical abuse down 77% in the statistics reported by the state from the early 1990s. But neglect, although it's nationally down about 11%, shows a rise of about 39% in New Hampshire since the early 1990s.
Yeah.
I should say, to give you a little bit of background here, this does parallel, for the most part, what we're seeing on the national level. A number of other studies have supported a decline in physical and sexual abuse. Crime overall, violent crime, including sex assaults and physical assaults, are down considerably in police reports. But it doesn't mean that the problem has gone away. No, far from it. We still have an unconscionable amount of child maltreatment, and it really exacts a tremendous toll on families and society as a whole.
Well, and we probably talk in a little bit more about why that neglect is up in the face of these other numbers. But so besides the overall decline in crime in society, David, why do you think these numbers for sexual abuse and physical abuse are down? I mean, this is good news.
Well, these are the forms of child maltreatment that I think we have done the most about. Sexual abuse, for example, has been a central focus of a lot of media attention, been the amount of prosecution that occurred, the amount of case finding that's occurred has been enormous. I think the strong message has gotten out, and we've done a lot in the way of prevention as well in that area. Physical abuse as well. I think physical abuse has been very strongly affected by all that we've done around domestic violence, making shelters available to victims of domestic violence, increasing the amount of prosecution and willingness to kind of take this kind of violence in the home seriously. Neglect, though, is not something that we have emphasized as much, and so I think it's probably not surprising that it hasn't declined as much or maybe at all.
All right. And I want to bring our other guests into this, too, and invite you with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jim Reams, to you, what are you seeing in your office, keeping in mind that by the time a case gets to you, it's probably pretty bad? I mean, you're a county attorney.
Yeah, we see the, I guess, the worst of the cases that we're all talking about here. Seen no decline in those cases, unfortunately. And you talk to any of the county attorneys across the state, and they're all surprised by figures that David Finkelhor was just talking about, because they're not seeing it in their offices. But
what are you
again,
seeing?
We see the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. So what are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing, you know, we constantly see those horrendous cases. We have a couple pending in my office now, a couple ready for trial in the next 60 days. And they're pretty bad. Each time we get one of those cases, the media immediately asks, is this the worst one you've ever seen? My response is always, they're all bad.
Mm.
But we're not seeing any decline in the criminal prosecution of those cases. And as Professor Finkelhor talked about, clearly prosecuting more of them, I think, and with bigger sentences.
Is that a matter, though, of greater awareness, greater willingness to bring these cases to the forefront, to prosecute, whereas maybe 20, 30 years ago, people said, this is a domestic matter and let's keep it within the home?
Well, I think we have a lot of moving parts in New Hampshire. I mean, we've had statutory changes. We now have a child advocacy center and available to almost every child in the state. We have public attitudes that have changed in terms of reporting these incidents and being willing to testify on them. So there's been a lot of moving parts all pushing in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. What do you think, Lorraine, your thoughts on these broad trends that we're talking about?
I guess I would agree with David and with Jim in terms of the data doesn't always reflect the practice or what's really going on for families and children in New Hampshire. And so I think that what we're seeing is not necessarily a decrease in the numbers of reports coming in. I don't always hang my hat on substantiation rates. Substantiation does not mean that there isn't something happening with the family. It may mean that we just need to do a better job with the family. One of the things that we do in New Hampshire is we probably have one of the longest investigation time periods compared to many other states. So we have a 60-day time period in which to conduct our protective assessment and determine what's going on with the family. And I think that that enables us to really sort through and sift through the complexity of the family's challenges and look at ways that we can provide supports and services without having to substantiate abuse or neglect.
Interesting. And maybe after a short break, we can define substantiation, how that can be mm-hmm. tricky in and of itself. Also, this term neglect, which mm-hmm. Professor Finkelhor finds is going up. We'll start taking your calls, too, so you can join us at 1-800-892-6477.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on checking up on child abuse in New Hampshire on The Exchange, and at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, an update on the gun debate in Congress. New Hampshire weather, winter storm warning in effect starting this evening, running through Tuesday evening. For today, starting out sunny, clouds on the increase in southern parts of the state this afternoon, highs 30 in the north, 35 to 40 for the rest of the state. Tonight, snow moves in the state late tonight, lows from 15 to 20 in the north country, near 25 in southern New Hampshire. Then tomorrow, snow heavy at times. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Groponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Groponi Auto Junction in Bow, and online 24 hours a day at groponi.com. And the Neve Network organizations working with the New Hampshire Department of Education to increase the college aspirations of local students at iamcollegebound.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking again at child abuse in the Granite State. Some of the trends, some of them looking more hopeful, others not so much. Our guests are Jim Reams, County Attorney for Rockingham County, Lorraine Bartlett, Administrator for All Field Services, including the New Hampshire Division of Children, Youth and Families Child Protection Bureau, and David Finkelhor, Director of the Crimes Against Children Research Center at UNH, and a professor of sociology there. A couple more quick questions for you all. Lorraine, to you, this is a really important term, substantiation. As I understand, you get tons of calls alleging child abuse. I'm nervous about what my neighbor's doing. I'm afraid of what my sister-in-law is doing. But substantiating those claims is another story.
Yes, it is. Obviously, first and foremost, we always look at safety and our children in danger. But substantiation is characterized as founded or unfounded. And founded means that we've got sufficient information and facts from the course of conducting a protective assessment to indicate that, in fact, a parent is a danger and has committed an act of abuse or neglect against a child, and therefore there's a need for the Division for Children, Youth, and Families to intervene in order to assure that child is not in danger and is safe. Unfounded is a little bit more of a difficult thing to talk about in terms of unfounded doesn't necessarily mean that there wasn't an incident that occurred. However, it means that the Child Protective Service worker, in collaboration with maybe the family's natural resources, meaning friends or family or community resources, were able to mitigate the potential risk of harm to that child and assure that they could be maintained safely at home, sometimes with community preventive services or other resources, and therefore we haven't made the determination that that individual has should have a founded finding against them, which puts them on a central registry and indicates that not only are they a risk of harm to their own children, but potentially to other children in the community.
And of the, 15,000, 14,000 allegations, if I can call them that come into your office, what percentage roughly, Lorraine, turn out to be substantiated, at least according to that threshold?
I guess I would have to say that of those 15 to 18,000 calls, about 8,000 of them actually get accepted for investigation in the field.
So about half, yeah.
And then probably between 7 and 8% of them result in a founded against a parent or caretaker.
Wow, that's not very much.
Well, I guess it depends on how you look at the way that we do our work. I mean, New Hampshire has a very wide scope for reporting. Everyone in the state of New Hampshire is a mandated reporter. That differs from some states where it's only professional reporters. So we have a wide door that narrows down as you get closer to the work with the families and really look at, is what was reported credible? And then is there enough information to demonstrate that the children that were named or as alleged victims are unsafe and have been harmed?
And one more definition I want to get out of the way before we move on. And that, to you, David Finkelhor, is neglect. You told us at the beginning of the program that while sexual abuse looks to be way down, physical abuse is way down. You said neglect cases are up almost 40% here in New Hampshire. How do we define neglect these days, David?
Well, neglect is hard to define, and I'm actually not certain of how it's statutorily defined in New Hampshire. But it typically means kids who have needs for medical care or education or food or shelter that are not being met by their families, and where this has caused some harm to the child. There's usually a harm threshold that's involved. One of the problems in figuring out what's gone on with neglect is because neglect is a little bit of a less clear-cut concept. It is possible that the definition has expanded over time, and that's some of the reason why we're seeing the increases. Like, have kids who are living in homes where there's domestic violence now more being treated as kids who are suffering from some kind of neglect? And that's not something that we considered or defined in that way a few years ago.
Are you mostly prosecuting child abuse cases, Jim, clear examples of sexual or physical abuse, or do you also occasionally get neglect cases?
We get almost exclusively abuse cases. We have obviously, standard of beyond a reasonable doubt to prevail in a criminal case, so that in and of itself, narrows it down to
sure.
Fairly intentional conduct. So we tend to see abuse, not neglect.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, all of you. This is Linda Nagel. She's a licensed social worker and program director at Child and Family Services, one of the state's largest nonprofits, which works with children and families. And Linda, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, and as I understand, you've been in the field with families a long time, going into homes. What sorts of problems do you see, Linda, that often lead to or provide the backdrop for child abuse?
Well, I think there's a lot going on, for the past, several years around families struggling economically, people losing their jobs, so there's a lot of stress. And I think, that puts a child at risk for physical abuse. As far as neglect, some of those factors, but we're seeing families where, there's complex issues going on with substance abuse, mental health issues, very poor families that, you know, are struggling to make ends meet. So I think it's a variety of things that lead to either the abuse or the or neglect that we, you know, we've been talking about.
And we hear so often, Linda, that so many of our problems in society in general, not just New Hampshire, are linked to substance abuse, alcohol abuse, drug abuse. How big a factor do you think that is when it comes to child abuse, Linda?
Well, I think it's a major factor. If you've got parents that are, you know, using substances, they're not supervising their children appropriately. Some of them, you know, children are found outside wandering around, so they could be at risk, you know, whether to get physically harmed or, you know, even invited in by a neighbor. If children aren't getting their needs met at home, sometimes they would end up in situations where they could be abused, whether it be a neighbor or a relative. So, you know, I think that the mental health issues that people are struggling with, as well as the substance abuse, are all contributing factors to why children, you know, and families are struggling.
And I'm thinking, Linda, that you have a pretty tricky job going into families, you know, dealing in these difficult situations. How hard is it for you to work with a parent who may feel like, you know, look, there isn't a problem in this home. I'm treating my child the way they need to be treated, maybe the way that I was treated, and how dare you tell me otherwise? How do you work around that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's starting where they're at, and I think every parent, and I truly believe this, I've been doing this for 25 years, they love their children. And I think if we can try to reflect and mirror to them how it is their behavior or the child's living environment is affecting their child, we take it one step at a time and really try to be, like I say, a voice for the child, and really taking a look at, because the children that are experiencing abuse and neglect are acting out. There's a lot of issues. A lot of them have post-traumatic stress behaviors, so we try to say to the parents and try to educate them around how these behaviors may be the result of the way that they're living or something that's happened to them. So we just try to start with them, and we take it one step at a time. And like I said, I really do believe that most parents really love their children and want help.
What's changed, Linda, in the many years? And you said, wow, you've been working in this field for 25 years. What's mm-hmm. changed over that time in this line of work? And have those changes been for the better or for the worse? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they've been for the better. I've seen a lot of changes that DCYF has done in trying to really standardize their assessments. They use a model to go in that structured decision-making, or at least they used to, and trying to assess, you know, safety of children. And then I think there's been a lot of, I think someone mentioned it earlier, a lot of prevention programs going on. The schools have done great jobs about educating kids and around sexual abuse. I think that we have a lot of some really good prevention programs, some good family resource centers that are doing some great work. And, you know, I think the public knowledge is out there. Plus, you know, I think about years ago when I worked with families that was shaken baby syndrome. I'm not hearing a lot about that now. What cases coming in, I'm not hearing about babies being shaken. So I think the state has done a really nice job in letting parents know. And even when we work with families and we talk about sexual abuse, because we find that a mother's been sexually abused and maybe it's had some treatment, and she tells me about how she is talking with her daughter and making sure that it doesn't have to happen to her. Because we know that children that are in families with parents that have been abused are probably at higher risk.
Well, Linda, good to talk to you, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's Linda Nagel. She's been working in this field of child abuse and neglect for 25 years. She's a licensed social worker and program director at Child and Family Services. The exchange number for you to join us this hour is 1-800-892-6477. Join us with your questions or comments as we take another look at this issue of child abuse in New Hampshire, how we define it, what the trends are. Give us a call. What are you seeing in your own community, in your own experience? How do you think attitudes toward child abuse have changed over the years. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Jim Reams, a question for you, too. It was real interesting to hear Linda Nagle talk about how things have changed, heightened awareness, that broad net that Lorraine talked about, a lot more people looking at this. I wonder what your thoughts are in terms of more awareness, more people looking at this.
Well, I think it's clear that we have much more awareness, and David Finkelhor's figures show that with referrals increasing from 3.1 million to 3.4 million nationwide. That's roughly a 10% increase over 5 years. So people are willing to report it and willing to cooperate with all of us. Fortunately, in New Hampshire, DCYF has cut its response time by almost 50%, and we're now half the national average for how quickly DCYF responds to the referrals, and that's, I think that's an incredible statistic.
Yeah, it is, especially given that there have been some pretty deep cuts over at Health and Human Services. All of you, I want to take some calls. We've got lots of people who want to join our conversation. Again, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, by the way. Let's go to Emily in Pittsfield first. Hi, Emily. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I have worked in child protection in Massachusetts for years and now work in community mental health here in New Hampshire. And I seem, you know, it seems to me like there is some correlation between cuts in addiction treatment services and adult mental health services in the rise of neglect in the state. And to me, it seems, you know, my experience in the field is that when there is substance abuse and domestic violence and mental health issues, especially when they happen in the same family, which is actually really pretty common, that, of course, neglect goes up, and neglect being sort of the catch-all, you know, if it doesn't meet the level of intentional infliction of physical harm, like physical abuse, neglect sort of becomes the catch-all category.
You know, this is interesting, Emily, and David Finkelhor told us earlier that while physical and sexual abuse seem to be going down, although there's, you know, some conflicting thoughts about that, that abuse is up. Do you think, Emily, that social workers such as yourself just more readily categorize cases as neglect these days because neglect is a lower threshold, so to speak? Is that what's going on?
Well, I think that that's some of it, for sure. But I also think that there's a lot of what is actually, you know, behavior from parents that's really harmful to children that doesn't fit into, you know, causing a physical injury or inappropriate sexual contact with a child, but has to be, you know, but has to be looked at, such as parents who are addicted, spending money on the substance of choice as opposed to caring for their children, or just being emotionally absent.
Right.
You know, and so it's not because the threshold is lower, but just because the issues are different.
Sure. Thanks a lot for calling in, Emily. Lorraine, to you first, I think, and then maybe your thoughts, David Finkelhor, too. Go ahead, Lorraine.
I guess I'll respond a little bit to what Emily said. In terms of neglect, I think that, and Linda said this too, you start where the client is at. And for neglect, oftentimes, you know, every family has developmental stages and tasks that they need to manage for children at those various stages, whether a child's 2, 5, 7, or 17. Every parent has to manage certain things. And it's true. Substance abuse, domestic violence, mental health issues can impact the parent's functional ability to be able to manage those tasks, whether it be diapering a child and providing supervision, to getting them off to school on time because they're not able to get up in the morning to be able to do that, to manage the curfews of their teenagers, that type of thing. And I think that, again, what we look at is safety, and neglect in New Hampshire is statutorily that a child is without proper parental care and control necessary for their educational, physical, mental health, emotional health. So oftentimes, you know, when we talked earlier about the potential decline in sexual abuse and physical abuse, neglect can become that catch-all in terms of it. Is it lack of supervision? Is it failure to protect on the part of a particular parent who wasn't aware or didn't attend to what was happening to their child, and then they ended up being neglected? And that's where we come in and try to look at safety, danger, and solutions with the family to how we resolve those neglect issues with them.
How do you resolve it, though, Lorraine, if somebody's got a serious mental illness and they don't have mental health coverage?
There's where the rubber hits the road in terms of trying to engage that parent in getting some assistance while they're potentially on a waiting list for some mental health assistance. How can we help support them? Is there a way that we can provide some respite for them? Can we get them connected to a mental health service because we're the referring agent for them, as opposed to them seeking it on themselves, maybe helping them with facilitated referral to those services where we help them make the call to get it?
Okay. Well, David Finkelhor, your quick thoughts, and then we're going to take a break, and then I've got another email and some more calls. But David Finkelhor, what do you think about Emily's point and what she's seeing?
Well, the issue, I think it's important for people to understand that the improvements that we've seen are not just with the substantiated child abuse data. They relate to some surveys that have been done. So, for example, when we talk to young people about their experiences growing up today, we actually hear that compared to 20 years ago, they report less sexual assault, they report less bullying, and they do report less violence in their lives, which is some good news. There have been some other studies done nationally, like the National Incidence Study of Child Abuse and Neglect, that have shown declines in physical and sexual abuse just with surveys of professionals asking what they are seeing, irrespective of what gets substantiated. And those have also supported the fact that there have been some declines. So it is, I think, surprising to some people because we get such a diet of stories in the media about the things, the cases that or terrible things happen, and that certainly happens, and we certainly have a very big problem going forward. But there have been some improvements, and I think that that's something we should take some heart in.
Yeah, take those scary headlines with a grain of salt, perhaps. We will talk more after a short break. More of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, developing new sustainable models of healthcare, improving lives for generations to come. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And from Markham & Marge of Keene, New Hampshire, worldwide coding supplier, making their mark through people and innovation locally and globally for over 100 years. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
NHPR keeps you up to speed with what's going on, whether it's breaking news from across the state or the other side of the world, and now it's even easier with the new NHPR app, available for iPhone or Droid. Of course, you can stream us wherever you are and share stories with friends, but the newest feature is for your NHPR member card. The app finds the nearest businesses to you that honor the card and updates the directory every month to include the newest discounts. Download the NHPR app today.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Granite State veterans of the Iraq War reflect on this conflict 10 years later. Email us your thoughts, comments, and personal stories, if you have them, at nhpr.org. And then be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, an update on child abuse and neglect in New Hampshire, and some data show that the situation may be improving. Our number here in The Exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email that came in from Tom in Portsmouth. And Jim Reams, I'm going to give this to you. He says, thank you, by the way, for tackling this tough issue. Would you guests care to comment on the success of organizations like CASA, court-appointed special advocates in New Hampshire and other states? He says he's been impressed with what New Hampshire's CASA has been able to accomplish. Also, might your guests comment on the status of New Hampshire courts in attempting to resolve issues of abuse and neglect. And Jim Reams, again, given that you're county attorney for Rockingham County, I'd love to throw that one to you, please.
Okay. Well, for Tom, I think there's a couple of points, and that is both CASA and the Child Advocacy Centers that have grown through New Hampshire have had a huge impact on the cases generally. I mean, you have somebody who's willing to be an advocate for the child in the court all the time is always helpful. And then we have, you know, the growth of the Child Advocacy Centers, which started in our first one in Portsmouth and now pretty much cover the state. Both have had a huge impact on our ability to handle these cases and get services to the people that need them. As at the same time, helping us prosecute if it comes to that. And fortunately, that the ones that get prosecuted are the small tip of the iceberg, and they're the worst.
Yeah, the bad headlines that David Finkelhor mentioned earlier. What about the courts, though? There were a lot of headlines last year and the year before about courts, you know, closing down, you know, a couple days a month and cases being, you know, backlogged and so forth. Have you seen that, Jim?
Well, we clearly see the slowdown in the court system, and they're struggling to just, you know, keep ahead of things or keep even with things. Child cases tend to get the highest priority. You know, I mean, we don't have problems getting hearings on cases involving children. You know, any emergency will be dealt with appropriately. It can be a struggle running around the state looking for a judge.
Wow.
But, you know, there's always somebody available, and we get the court orders that we need to protect the children. And I'm sure DCYF has a similar experience. But it's, you know, it's a little bit more of a struggle than it used to be.
Let's take another call if we could. Steve's been waiting in Laconia. Hi, Steve. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Laura. I enjoy your show.
Good.
I do have some personal experience with the system in the state, DCYF, in the court system. About 3 years ago, I started a pretty nasty divorce proceeding. We had three children in common, ranging from the ages of 14 down to 8 years old. Unfortunately, my ex-wife had a bout with mental illness. And as we all know, our state's mental health system is in shambles right now and has been for quite a while. There was a lot of not physical abuse, but mental abuse towards the children from their mother about the situation, their situation. And my experience with the court system is, unless you have physical evidence of gross sexual or physical abuse, there's nothing that anybody can do for you. It's a lot harder, as I'm sure your guests can elaborate, to prove verbal abuse. And also, once physical abuse does happen, in our case, unfortunately, it did. My daughter had several cerebral palsy and had some surgery, and her mom had one of these episodes that she has, panic attacks, whatever you wanted to call it at the time. And my daughter was telling her counselor, I had got them in counseling at the time, about this. Her mom pushed her after she had some surgery, and the counselor in turn contacted DCYF. DCYF did follow up within about a week, but unfortunately, the story that my ex-wife told DCYF was a lot different than what my daughter had told, and unfortunately, their case was unfounded because there was no real hard evidence that the court would count.
So it was difficult to substantiate. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I just feel like, you know, we got lost in the system, and the physical, not physical abuse so much anymore, but mental abuse continues every day. You know, we share 50-50 custody, and I have tried through my lawyer in the court system over the last 3 years to, you know, get her the help that she needs. She's in denial that there's no problems. She was on some medicine for a while, on and off the medicine, which I'm sure everybody knows is not good. It makes the situation worse. And without that hardcore evidence, you know, the court's not willing to do anything for you or give you more custody. You know, I just feel like they can't protect our children in the current system.
Steve, it's heartbreaking to hear from you. And yet I'm so glad that you called, because there's so much in this this call. I'm not even really sure where to begin. David Finkelhor, maybe you can address just what's so frustrating for Steve is that he sees clear what he calls, you know, mental abuse, and he, there's nothing he can do about it. What do you think, David?
Well, I think that there are the kinds of problems that families have that there should be more resources to deal with beyond the child protection system. There should be the kinds of resources that kids can access who are going through divorces, mm-hmm. kinds of family counseling, reconciliation programs that can help families deal with conflicts and problems that arise as they try and negotiate, you know, in the aftermath of divorces. And unfortunately, when it's hard to access those services, frequently all eyes turn to the child protection system, which may not be really well suited to deal with those kinds of complicated situations.
And you know, Lorraine Bartlett, we talked a lot this hour about physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect. What about this category that our caller mentions, mental abuse?
Emotional abuse is probably, he's correct, probably one of the most difficult things to prove in terms of harm to the child. You have to be able to connect the behavior of the parent directly to what the child is exhibiting for behaviors, emotional responses. How are they functioning? It's not clearly defined in the statute. I do think that, you know, I appreciate what the caller had to say in terms of, you know, shared parenting often presents significant challenges for families when one parent feels that more should be happening for a child than the other parent feels should be happening, difficulties around addressing their own issues, mental health issues. So it is a challenge to show. I do want to say, though, that with the impact, with some of the changes in the court processes and the courts needing to be able to take into full account all of the information that's presented to them by us, as well as the family, they will, when they deem appropriate, put appropriate services in place. And you know, if this was a marital matter, the court is weighing all the facts before them and making a decision about whether or not is there a psychologist or a mental health professional that can attest to this individual's adult behavior is harming this child.
And what about the idea of he said, she said? I mean, you know, the daughter was pushed. She has physical challenges. Mm-hmm. I think Steve said she has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. But the mother said, no, I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to untangle he said, she said.
It's very hard to untangle he said, she said. It's based on perception, observation. We're going to be looking at the facts of the matter to determine is there consistency in what's happening or what we're hearing, what's the duration of the problem. Oftentimes children may disclose something initially and then recant that, and it may potentially take multiple reports to the agency, to the school, to a community professional before we're able to clearly delineate and define exactly what's happening in that family, again, because of the complexity of the issues. So I would, you know, I could see all of that needing to be weighed multiple times before action could be taken. What we would do typically is work with the primary custodial parent around what are they willing to be, what are they willing to put in place to assure that their child is safe, given the information that's been provided to us.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thank you so much for calling, and good luck. I guess very quickly, could I ask you, Lorraine, I would never ask you to diagnose a certain case on the air, but what does somebody do when they feel like this is a real problem and I hurt for my kids and I don't know where to go and I don't know how to turn? I mean, are there sort of outside community resources that someone can draw on when they just feel sort of bereft?
I would be encouraging an individual that I was dealing with in that situation to look into the potential of some community mental health supports for themselves. Is there a local family resource center they could connect to for some supports around parenting? One of the advantages that they have, you know, safety is a community responsibility. So this is a young person that sounds like they're in school. Is the school guidance counselor involved in providing some supports for that child? And what about the local Division of Developmental Services, given that this is a child with cerebral palsy? Are there any additional supports and services that some of the community agencies can put in place for them?
Again, the number for you to join us here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's see if we can get one more call in. This is Michael in Pittsfield. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Okay.
The state had, my child was taken needlessly, I feel. And they had my child up in Rochester, so I know who Lorraine Bartlett is. I feel, well, when they took my child, there was no harm, so we're like in civil court. In civil court, there is no, they don't have to abide by any laws. They don't have to go by a Child Protection Act. And you kind of get wrapped up in it. And I think, and I was part of the grievance committee, I put in my grievance, and I was part of 20 citizens that our cases was founded. Most of them, they were all different, but I feel that each one of us had a child that was harmed by the state. The Health and Human Services and the courts do not have a complaint department. There's nowhere we can bring, you know, try to make things right or open people's eyes on the bigger, on the, this problem.
And Michael, how long ago was this?
It was quite a while ago, but I haven't missed too many hearings ever over in Concord on children's issues, and I, the legislature just shies away from all this. And I see thousands of other people wanting to bring a complaint in, and with the new administration that we got and the governor, they don't want to hear our complaints, so they shut us right down.
Well, this is definitely an issue that comes up over the years. So, Michael, I'm glad you called in. And all of you, maybe you first, David Finkelhor. Boy, this is the other side of this coin is that, you know, we talk about children in dangerous homes, so to speak. But then you have some people who feel like, look, the child was taken away needlessly, as our caller said. How do you sort that out, David?
You know, I'm going to defer this question to somebody who has more experience with how the system works, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sort of right in the trenches. Well, and Jim, to you then, I guess, partly, and then obviously to Lorraine as well.
Well, it's a little difficult to comment about that. There are some procedures to complain about court decisions. I mean, first of all, you have the obvious appeal to the New Hampshire Supreme Court to review any decision made about custody or anything else about children. And then there is a provision to challenge judges through the Judicial Conduct Committee.
He said this happened a while ago. It's my understanding that nowadays it's a lot harder to take a child from the home than it perhaps used to be. Is that your understanding, Jim?
Well, the law is, tilts in favor of keeping the child in the family. The DCYF mandate, in a sense, is to, you know, preserve the family. So the, you know, bias for the system is to keep the child in that family. It takes, you know, a lot of evidence to take a child away from a family.
Yeah. I guess it's hard when that family's broken up because then you have to make the decision who does the child
right.
go to. Yeah. Real quick to you, Lorraine, and then I have just a couple last-minute questions for you.
Jim's right. The Division for Children, Youth, and Families does make a concerted effort whenever possible to assure that children stay at home with their parents. First and foremost, that's our goal. If they can be safely maintained in the home, we'll leave them there. We really only remove children in this day and age when the situation is so egregious that they're in danger and we cannot assure their safety in the home.
So policies have changed?
Yes.
Over the years?
Over the years, yes. I would also say, though, that I think that the department itself, the Department of Health and Human Services, we do have a very strong ombudsman program where people who are unhappy with the decisions or perhaps don't clearly understand what transpired in the course of our involvement can bring their complaint or grievance to and try and have that addressed and resolved in an affirmative way. There's always going to be times when parents are unhappy with the action that we took and disagree. And the best that we can do is try to work with them and help them to understand how do we move forward in working together so that children can be safely returned home.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And David Finkelhor, to you, we started out the hour crunching some of the numbers that you've been crunching, looking at some of these more positive trends, declines in abuse but increases in neglect. What are you going to be looking at next, David, in terms of these numbers over the next year or so?
Well, we're continuing to monitor them. We're doing some additional national surveys. We're looking at questions about whether social media and the internet have had any influence, whether new kinds of mental health treatments are having any influence. So we'll be trying to see how those kinds of changes play out.
All right. Well, David, very good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
That's Professor David Finkelhor, Director of the Crimes Against Children Research Center and Professor of Sociology at UNH. Jim Reams, good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me again.
Jim Reams, County Attorney for Rockingham County, and Lorraine Bartlett, thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate being offered the opportunity.
Lorraine Bartlett, Administrator for all field services, including the New Hampshire Division of Children, Youth and Families Child Protection Bureau. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, New Hampshire veterans on the Iraq War's 10th anniversary. In March of 2003, the U.S. began airstrikes in what officials said would be a short war. 8 years later, our forces pulled out with a death toll of more than 4,000 Americans and 100,000 Iraqis. We'll talk with Granite Staters who served in Iraq, what they experienced, and their reflections a decade later. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 here on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm.